Good evening, everybody. My name's Judy. I'm an alcoholic. I wanted to welcome you all to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet here every Monday at 7 o'clock. And we're going to take a few minutes and just have a moment of silence. And I'll say the Serenity Prayer together for anybody that would like to do that. God, grant me the
strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay. Well, again, welcome. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which you'll find across the hallway and up the small flight of stairs there. At this time, if you would, silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of these simple actions. I'm now going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, and does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic and sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing step 10. And I'll be reading the first paragraph, or I'll be reading paragraphs through the evening, and then our two speakers are going to share on those. And let me introduce our speakers. We have two of our home group members tonight, Jill and Ryan. And we're going to get going in just a second. I did want to review the step, at least read it. The 10th step, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So this is the 10th step in our program of recovery. This is the point at which we arrive after we've admitted that we're powerless over alcohol and we don't have a solution to this problem that we find ourselves in. That we found some kind of power greater than ourselves, or at least able to acknowledge that there is one, whether we've connected to it or not. That's the second step. In the third step, we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to whatever idea we can come up with about who this power might be. In the fourth step, we do an inventory of our handicaps, that's the way the book calls it, to discover our defects of character, our motives for our behavior, and we're in the throes of the process where we get to identify who and what we actually are without a power greater and under the influence of alcohol. In the sixth and seventh step, we evaluate on a daily basis how we have to surrender to that power and continue to identify how we these defects that we've identified manifest in our lives on a daily basis. In the eighth step, we make a list of all the persons we've harmed. We do all of this, of course, under the direction of a sponsor. And in the ninth step, we make personal, direct amends to the people that we've identified on that list. And that list came from the inventory that we took. And we have the courage and the ability to take that inventory because of the previous five steps before the inventory. So now that brings us to step 10. And step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So these are commonly referred to 10, 11, and 12 as the maintenance steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where we're starting tonight. So we're going to be on page 84, if you have your book with you. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory, continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Jill, would you like to start us off?
I'm Jill, an alcoholic.
Hey, Jill.
Okay, step 10 is, I thought that when I got through the first nine steps that I was going to be magically well and nothing was ever going to be a problem again. But as I've walked through it, and this really becomes more and more defined and more obvious as I continue to take this. You know, the first is a preliminary. Look at my defects or my things that sabotage me continually into drinking. So I identified those. Then the rest of the sobriety walk is identifying them on a daily basis, how they manifest in different forms. I got through the worst of them and cleaned up the wreckage of the past, but now I've got to worry about the wreckage of the future, the wreckage of today. And unfortunately for me, I'm so hard-headed, and I can be really selfish and dishonest at times when I'm trying to preserve my dignity. In other words, we call that pride. And when I'm driven by my pride, I can make some bad decisions, say things hastily. And so in order to not let that pile up like it did when in the early steps when I was doing my initial inventory, I look at it daily. And it has to be a continuous process. And the only reason I don't do this sometimes is because I forget that I'm powerless over alcohol. I forgot what brought me to my knees to the point where I wound up in AA and had to do the darn thing anyway. You know, it's like I get kind of full of myself and think, well, I've done all of that. I'm a pretty good person now. And it's like you never get rendered completely free of the defects. I really feel like my defects of character are a way of God keeping me humble, that I'll keep walking and I'll keep relying on Him and I'll keep looking. Because it's only by continually looking at these things as they come up, and they come up in different, I'll call them venues. You know, what used to only come up over here in the drinking arena, I see that I do the same thing in the work arena and in the family arena. And then I get put into new situations and where I get to identify a whole new set of arenas and areas where I do some of these things. So to look at it, I had to really get my mind wrapped around that. I really am powerless over alcoholism. And if I'm not trying to find a way to walk towards an ideal is, the book, they talk about being a perfection in the book, and I don't even really think I want to be perfect. I just want to have the sense of peace that I got from step 7 to be more of a part of my life than the chaos that goes on in my brain 24/7 when I'm not doing this. And I can get really wrapped up. It's, if I've done something during the day, what will happen to me is I will wake up around 2 or 3 o'clock thinking, That's a pretty good indication that there's something that wasn't on that inventory earlier. And it's like a lot, and sometimes I've actually gotten out of bed and sat down and done it and gone, like, what is that? And I'll realize, oh my gosh, that was a conversation with so-and-so. And that's a conversation I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning having, trying to justify myself that it was like, oh, well, that was their fault anyway. That didn't need to be on my list. But it becomes a lifetime practice, but it also becomes kind of an adventure. You get to see who and what, I get to see who and what I am. And I'm not, it's not about good and bad and right and wrong. It's about what it does, what trips me up on my daily walk. What are the things that I haven't been able to see before? Because as I do this, I see new things over and over and over. I went through a phase recently where I wanted to do something that's really good. It's really going to be something that benefits me. But I'm riddled by fear. And so I tell myself all kinds of things about why I shouldn't do it, why I should stay where I am, why I shouldn't do it, all these justifications. And it wasn't until I talked to my sponsor and I did an inventory on it. And we started identifying what this was. And it's been the same old deal for me. I'm not in control of it. I can't plan the outcome. And it doesn't suit me real well. So it's almost like learning to walk in faith no matter what's going on, especially since I've been given a pretty darn good life. I want to enjoy that life. I want to see where else it evolves and where else it comes out. So if I don't do this on a daily basis, I'm still waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, not moving anywhere, I'm just thinking. And unfortunately, I did way too much of that. I wasted way too much of my life to spend any more time in my head. Thanks, that's all I have.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Step 10, I think, is pretty awesome because it's kind of what has allowed me to largely not fall apart anymore. I've experienced a lot of, I don't know, stuff in my life that I would like handle for as long as I could, as hard as I could, and eventually I just didn't know what to do with it anymore, and there was usually some kind of like combustion in my life. I just kind of like knocked everything down and had to start all over again. So I've found 10 steps to be pretty valuable, and to be honest with you, I would not do it if I could find some other way to deal with all this stuff. Because this talks about prayer, this talks about being honest with another person, it talks about like apologizing, it talks about helping other people, and in theory that sounds really good, but in actual practice I want absolutely nothing to do with any of it. So I tried really hard for a long time to not have to deal with this stuff, but it didn't work, so I got real interested in it. Unlike Jill, who did not want to be perfect, I do want to be perfect. And when it talks about continuing to set right any new mistakes as we go along, like, I know it's unrealistic for me to expect myself to be perfect, but I really do. So when I started to continue to make mistakes after like adopting this spiritual way of life, I found it incredibly frustrating. You know, I'm like supposed to be spiritual and good now. This should not be happening to me. Like, why did I do that? I didn't want to admit that I was still experiencing anger or fear or dishonesty or any of the other stuff that it's talking about in here, because I thought that meant that I was doing something wrong, you know? Like, God doesn't like me or God's not going to help me out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing that stuff. And what I've discovered is it's not necessarily about whether or not I make mistakes, or that these things do still occur in my life, but what I do about them when they do happen. And I've had some resentments and fears and stuff that I'll tell you have been incredibly persistent. Like years, it took me years to really let go of them. I was getting divorced when I got to AA, and you know, I got a better attitude about that stuff in the process of the steps, but it produced a lot of anger in me, and for years I had to pray about this stuff, and I remember getting frustrated, you know, applying the steps to it, and it's not going away, and it's not going away, and it's not going away, and wondering, like, why? What am I doing wrong? And, like, texting my sponsor, and I'm doing all this stuff. Why is it not going away? And getting the response, like, finally, you get it, you know? And I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's when I really kind of understood that it's not about whether or not these things crop up in me, because it's going to happen. It's about what I do when they do crop up. And this is a very practical thing for me. Continuing to watch, when I experience selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear, it's really just kind of like a five-step guide to how to deal with it. The first thing that I have to do is I have to actually realize that I'm like angry or afraid, or selfish or dishonest. I forgot about those two for a couple of years. That's why I always focus on like the anger and fear, because they're the ones that bother me the most. It's true. I forgot about the dishonesty part for a long time. I'm not like a really big out and out liar. I'm horrible at it. I can't really do it. But where I am really good at is like not talking about stuff, not being honest. Like, I will withhold information from you. My absolute favorite lie to tell, how are you doing? Fine. Absolutely fine. I was joking with Iran one day. It's like, if you really want to know how I'm doing, you have to ask me twice, because the first time I'm going to lie to you. It's just not good. And it is a pride thing, like Jill was talking about. You know, I don't want to admit that I'm having problems. The great, big, powerful Ryan, I can handle this stuff. I don't need your help. Thank you very much. A lot of times, the stuff that's going on in my head is, to be quite frank, embarrassing. That's the kind of stuff that you get locked up for if you actually talk about it. Not only that, I can be incredibly petty. I've gotten to an imaginary battle about report covers with a coworker once. He didn't even know that we were in it. You know? And who wants to admit that kind of stuff? Like, it's like, I know I'm not supposed to be feeling this or thinking of it. I am. That's my other favorite thing, is like, please don't judge me by my thoughts. Please don't judge me. I can't help them. They do what they're going to do. So I didn't want to talk about that stuff. And that's, for me, how a lot of dishonesty did come into my life. You know, I did that honest and thorough fourth and fifth step. And then I promptly went back to not talking about stuff, and trying to pretend it didn't exist and hide it. And I'll tell you, that's a very painful way to live. But eventually I did get on the bandwagon. I learned a lot of lessons the hard way. And I totally forget where I was going with this. But that's the big thing. The first thing, I have to realize that I'm even doing it. Because I can't take any of these other actions unless I know that those things are occurring in my life. And I'll tell you, there have been times when I've walked around for weeks or months completely unaware that that stuff was going on. So the first thing that happened to happen, I had to bring it into my awareness. And then it's very simple. Say a prayer. Talk to another person. If I've done something wrong, I need to try to make that right. And then to resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And that looks like, sounds really nice and sweet and simple on paper. In reality, for me, sometimes this is a little bit messier. I remember one day at work, somebody had done something that I didn't like that, well, they shouldn't have done it. I was totally right. But anyhow, I was very angry and upset about it, because they weren't doing what they were supposed to, and it was going to make me look bad with a customer of ours. So I get the phone call, and instead of like taking care of business, I realize about 15 minutes later that I have ceased working, and I am literally staring at my desk, thinking about the messed up stuff that they have just done, how it's going to affect me, how wrong they are, all the things that we need to do to change it, what I'm going to tell this person, and all this stuff. And I'm completely consumed by resentment. And I don't know if any of you guys have felt angry, but it's not fun. I mean, it's fun for a little bit, because you get to have like the winning argument in your head. But after a short period of time, it's very uncomfortable. And so I did. So I said the prayer. I asked God to remove it from me. And then I talked with a coworker. I told her what these people had done, how they had wronged me. She wasn't that interested. She's like, yeah, just blah, 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 take care of it. I was very disappointed by her reaction. But she was right. I did just kind of need to go take care of it. And then I was turning my thoughts to someone I could help. In that instance, it wasn't another alcoholic. It's, how do I be helpful at work? How do I take care of this customer? How do I get things done? And I want to tell you that resentment like instantly went away. What happened is, after over a period of several hours, my mind kept messing with me, like, get angry again, Ryan, get angry again, pay attention to me. And so it was a process over and over again of a couple hours of having to pray and turn my thoughts, pray and turn my thoughts, pray and turn my thoughts, pray and turn my thoughts. But what happened was, by about 2 o'clock, I was fine. All that tension in my chest wasn't there. I was laughing and joking with coworkers. I could enjoy life again. Things were getting done, and everything was fine. So that's what my 10 step looks like. They're not always pretty. And I love this business about growing in understanding and effectiveness, not being an overnight matter. I was a little hesitant about the AA stuff when I first got here. I don't know, not that I had a problem with anything that you were saying. It's just I didn't really want to actually have to do any of it. But when I did finally get sober, I was a bit of an AA junkie. That's the only way I can describe it. I like took my big book everywhere. I was going to learn all about it. I couldn't get enough of it. I remember one week I went into the grocery store and I realized I had my big book with me. Like, that's how into it I was. It's a little sad, but that's what it is. But I really thought that I could just like learn this stuff and get it down. You know, I'm going to read through this. I'm going to study it. I could quote pages to you, quote it. I was Little Miss AA. And it really isn't an overnight matter. And I really value the time that I spent studying that stuff because I understand and know things that I never would have before. Like, I didn't even really know what an alcoholic was. Like, I knew that I was one, but I didn't understand what it meant to be powerless and all that stuff. And that really taught me that. But it's really through the practice of doing these things that has really taught me and allowed me to grow in that understanding and effectiveness. And last thing, there's so much in this like one freaking paragraph. This business of love and tolerance. I really thought that I was a loving and tolerant person. And then I realized that I had to stay in AA. When I look back at my life, like, I thought I was easygoing and I just liked people. But then I look at how often I left things. Leave the state, leave the city, leave a job, leave a person. I would get to this point where I would put up with you for as long as I could, but then it was just time to go. And I wouldn't have been able to put it to you in those terms, but what I really was intolerance. And honestly, being in AA and knowing that I needed to be here and that if I left, my chances of staying sober were questionable and that I would have to stay is really what's been taught me how to be tolerant. And that was pretty difficult. I want to tell you that you guys like taught me to be tolerant by example, but really it's just kind of I had to learn how to put up with you. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but they like invite the craziest people on the earth to AA, and then they encourage them to stay. And I did. I can be a little bit judgmental. I remember sitting in AA hearing you guys talk about all this spiritual stuff, and then I hung around a little bit longer and I noticed what you were actually doing. It was very offensive to me. And I had to learn how to put up with you. And in that time, I might have been a little bit of a terror. I don't know. We're not going to talk about that. But there was this guy, Jim W. He's absolutely fabulous. And what he said to me, and it took me about a year to figure out, was maybe the people of AA are practicing the principles on you. You know, maybe they're tolerating you. And that is, hey, it never occurred to me. And about a year after he told that to me, I realized that the people of AA had always accepted me. You know, I have made a lot of mistakes. I've showed up at meetings drunk. I've been rude and thoughtless. I've blown people off. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And like, nobody asked me to leave, you know, and I didn't appreciate that at the time. But I do today. And it is this process of love and tolerance. And to be honest with you, that's a God-given thing. That did not come from me. As I just said, I don't know how to do that. I'm a leaver. Then that's all I got about that paragraph.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks very much.
Okay, we're still on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation.
We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Jill.
Okay. The first sentence I love because there's two things about the first sentence. It's a fact. We've ceased fighting anyone or anything or anyone, even alcohol, if we're doing this. Now, it's also a good indicator. If I'm not doing this, I'm probably fighting. And it's like, and I have a bad habit of fighting with people around me. But a lot of it, like Ryan was saying, it goes on in my head. You know, you may not be realize that you're involved in a battle here, but I do. I really do. But it's true. After a while, it was like God knocks the rough edges off me continually. And one of the things is that people used to say I had a pit bull mentality. I would not let go of anything for anything. And it gave me justification for drinking for way longer than it was reasonable to be drinking. So I come here with that personality that wants to battle the whole world because I'm so terrified of everything that's going on around me. And I got a huge ego and pride. So we got to be in control and I've got to know everything and all of that. So there's a lot of conflict going on. And after a while, it gets put in perspective, not through my efforts. It's through the steps and doing the inventory. And I get to see who I am by saying and seeing that, you know, I'm trying to play God. I'm trying to run the show. And it's not been an overnight matter. That's been gradual. But the thing about the alcohol is important here. Sanity will have returned. We'll be seldom interested in liquor. I can't tell you the exact minute that happened, but it happened somewhere around step three for me where I wasn't plagued with it because I had a real terrible desire to drink. I mean, I battled that daily when I first came here. I mean, at some days it was just about driving me crazy because I wanted to drink so bad. It was the only relief I ever got from my life. And what was going on in my head is to belt down a few and then you didn't look so bad. And I could go out and face the world and all of this kind of stuff. But I was here and I was trying to do these things really pitifully at times. But the minute I made that decision to try to follow through with this, it was like the obsession got lifted. And that was such a gift in itself. I can remember telling someone one time, you know, if I don't ever get anything other than having that desire to drink taken from me, it's enough. Because that was horrible. I mean, it was one of the strongest compulsions I've ever known. And sometimes I can almost get shivers just thinking about it now. I came home from the hospital one time. I'd been in the hospital for 3 days with alcohol poisoning. And I stood at the kitchen sink, and I poured bourbon in a glass, and I stood there and I drank it. And it was just like, I couldn't not do it. You know, I'd just been in the hospital very, very sick, but I could not do that. So having that taken away was huge. And it wasn't anything I did. I didn't conquer it. That's the thing that probably ticks me off more than anything. No bragging rights here. You just, it gets taken from you. But you react sanely and normally. And this is also how I start acting today in situations where I used to just have a shotgun reaction. You know, whoo, shoot from the hips, you know. You've said something I don't like, I hate you forever. But now, now I go, what did they say? Sometimes. But it has an effect on me of looking at this, asking for it being taken away, and knowing that I didn't do it. You know, that my best efforts couldn't get me sober, couldn't get the booze out of my hands. It could not conquer these defects of character. I joke sometimes because I took a whole bunch of Dale Carnegie courses one time trying to figure out how to win friends and influence people. Well, I was doing that with the steps too, how to conquer these things. And I can remember I was really struggling in AA for quite a while, and I told my sponsor one day, I'm trying so hard. And she goes, well, you stop trying. You aren't the one that's going to relieve you of these things. It's going to be a power greater than you. So out of that process, I found a power greater than me, and I've come to trust it a lot more than I ever have. And some days that doesn't look too good either. Some days it's there's no trust at all, but it's a process. It's a process, not an event. So I'm going to stick with that one. We're not avoiding temptation. We've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And that has happened to me in so many parts of my walk. It happened with the alcohol, but when I was walking through some of my amends process, and I realized that I've got a creator that protects me and covers me with his love, no matter where I am. Because I was in a situation with a family member where I was terrified of this person my whole life, terrified. But when I had to be around him, I really felt like I was in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. And I feel that way a lot of times, because when you're riddled by fear like I am, I always feel threatened. And my threatening doesn't come out as I cower. My threatening comes out that I'm ready to battle. I'm going to fight you. And I come across real harsh and real defensive most of the time. So as working this process, and this step in particular, someone said to me at work recently, it says, you know, you are constantly changing. You're not who you were even 5 years ago. And then they said, well, tell me what that's about. And she wanted to talk about religion. and I go, well, I don't know. I said, I think it just happened to me, because I'm not going to get a big lengthy discussion with someone that doesn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous about a spiritual awakening I've had because I stopped drinking. But instead, the problem has been removed. And that goes for all of my character defects. And when I'm tied up around a problem that I'm inventorying, the best advice I ever get is to take my hands off it. Leave it alone. Focus your attention on something else. You know, work, for instance. You know, that's always a good thing when I'm at work, to focus on that. Not focus on something else. So when I do that, the problem gets removed, or I get a new insight in it. It's like a new insight just comes. And it's not something that I battled to make sense of. It just is like all of a sudden a new thought comes into my head. And as that happens, I get more and more comfortable and more reliant on a power greater than me. So the process just keeps evolving. It gets larger as my sobriety progresses, but it also gets, they said the highway actually gets narrower. It's like I'm forced to surrender more often, quicker, more thoroughly. And it keeps going, and it's like, but that doesn't hurt when I have to do that. One time that would have hurt a great deal for me to have surrendered to anything. But as I've gotten sober and I've wanted to follow this path, the path can get narrow, it can get more defined. I have to understand what I believe and be able to stand on it and know why I believe that and be comfortable with that and say, okay, this is what I believe. This is the narrowness of the road. But it's serving me well to not be like, for a long time I was waffling back and forth, blowing this way and that way in AA. Someone would come up with one thing and I'd agree with that. They'd come up with something else, I'd agree with that. So I had a hard time figuring out what the steps were about until I worked with a sponsor to do the inventory, to do the amends. And as that's happened, I've gotten a defined idea of what I believe and why I believe it, and a conviction, I guess you could say. Because I never had a conviction about anything. And today I do. And that's why AA is so precious to me, because it's the only thing that got through to this hard-headed drunk. Now, when they say here, we are neither cocky nor afraid, I can still sometimes be that, both. Cocky, next minute afraid, you know. a little bit like Sybil some days. But that is how I react as long as I stay in fit spiritual condition. And that means I get up every morning. Boy, I have read the same pages in my big book every morning for years and years and years. I pray. I work with other people. I talk to my sponsor. I do my inventory. And the one thing that makes me want to do that is because of the results. It's not because at one time I did it because I felt like I had to, you know, otherwise I'm going to fall out drunk somewhere. But what's happened now is the insight is so precious, and it feels like you're walking in the sunlight of the Spirit. I hate that phrase because I always thought it sounded like hokey, but it really does feel like you're walking in the sunlight of the Spirit when that happens. When I'm surrendered and I can see things I could never see before, feel things I never could feel before, and know things I could never know before. And all of a sudden, it's like there's no doubt in my mind where that came from. That's all I have. Thanks.
Yeah, this is pretty freaking huge, because what this kind of tells me is that I'm not really going to want to drink anymore. And that really, really blows my mind. I probably wouldn't have believed that was going to happen if you had told me when I first got to AA. Honestly, when I first got to AA, all I knew was that I wanted to quit drinking, and that if you were an alcoholic and you wanted to quit drinking, you went to AA. And this absolutely blows my mind that I don't want to drink today. I was a person who loved to drink for a really long time, but at the end, it had become the most painful thing that I can ever describe. There's not really words. The only way I know how to explain it is like hell on earth. Some people think that hell is a place you go when you die. I just kind of disagree. I feel like I've lived it. I woke up, it was awful. I went to bed, it was awful. When I was sober, it was awful, which was really weird. When I was drunk, it was awful. And I just really didn't know how to quit drinking. I spent several years of my life trying to figure out, like, how do I not drink? How do I make this stop? And a lot of bad stuff. I was getting a lot of consequences at that point. And then somewhere inside of me was this knowledge that if I could just quit drinking, everything would be okay. But I couldn't figure out how, and that thought of a drink was with me like almost constantly. It was either drink or don't drink, drink or don't drink, you know, like this constant battle. So to not have that today is kind of mind-blowing to me. To be honest with you, I take it for granted a lot because it's just so rare I even think about it. And that did just kind of happen automatically. I don't walk around fighting not to drink. I've been to rehab a couple of times, and I remember getting out of the first rehab facility, and I was kind of like terrified because I was afraid that I was going to like go into a grocery store and accidentally start drinking and mess everything up. You know, I go into the grocery store all the time. As a matter of fact, it wasn't too long ago, I was walking around with a friend, and we looked down the chip aisle, and I said, it's dangerous down there. We can't go down there because I have a little garden salsa chip addiction right now. And so we walked down to the next aisle, and it was the booze aisle. I was like, oh, this one's safe. We can go down here. You know? And, like, that's what it's like today, and that baffles me because I always drink. Always drink. I drank no matter what. It didn't matter what consequence you put in front of me. It didn't matter who I was going to hurt or what I had to do or where I had to go. I was going to drink in spite of it all. And so that's just baffling. If you haven't experienced it, the only way I know how to really truly explain it is to talk about beets. I don't like beets. I've never had one, and I never want to have one. There's just something I just don't want. But I don't like wake up in the morning and think to myself, oh my God, I have to get a beet today. I don't go out and go on my lunch break and think, oh my God, I got to get a beet. I've got to get a beet soon, otherwise I might hurt somebody. I don't get off of work and think like, oh my God, I got to get a beet right now. Got to have a beet, got to have a beet. You know, and that's what it's like with booze. And it's just kind of happened. You know, when I really understood what it meant to be powerless over alcohol, and that I really truly had a problem that I was not going to be able to fix or worm my way out of, what I was told to do was like, stop trying to fix something that you can't fix. Just do AA and that problem will take care of itself. And what happened is I stopped trying to not drink anymore because it doesn't work. I don't know how to not drink. If I knew how to not drink, I never ever would have come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can guarantee you that. So what I did is I stopped worrying about not drinking, and I put all my attention and effort and energy into trying to live this way and practice the steps, and that obsession in my mind just disappeared. It's the craziest thing I've ever experienced in my life. And I really, they talk about miracles. There was this group I always went to, like, expect a miracle. I wasn't expecting a miracle. That's a miracle to me, to not have to live with that, to not live, have to have all that insanity in my head. I don't know where it went, but it can stay there. I didn't like it. And I'll tell you, I do have to admit, I want to tell you that I've never thought about drinking again, but it has popped up on me a couple of times over the years, which is vast improvement for what it was. But even then, I was okay, you know? I remember one time, it was a particularly, I was kind of new in sobriety, and I was particularly stressed out. I was at a new job, and I was meeting all these new people, and I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to fit in? This is not working. And I remember being at the 7-Eleven, and I'm like, kind of like looking at the beer thing. And you know what I did? I walked away. Sane and normal reaction. You know, if you're allergic to a strawberry and you see a strawberry shortcake sitting there, and you say, you know what, that looks good, but I'm not going to eat it because I'm going to break out into hives, that's a sane and normal reaction. And that's exactly what happened to me. I walked away from it, and that's not of me. I always drink. If I want to drink, I'm going to drink. I don't care what I got to do or who I got to hurt or where I got to go. And so that's freaking awesome. And it's been a relief. And that's all I got about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both. Okay, and our last paragraph tonight is on page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
Okay, this paragraph, unfortunately, you don't have to do this yourself. You can watch people that walk away from AA, and it's enough of an eye opener. It has been for me, watching people that seem to be on a spiritual beam and fall off and disappear into the abyss, and they really do. I mean, it's a tragic thing I've seen. But what happens to me when I get comfortable sometimes. I go, well, this isn't, you know, I'm doing okay. I'll sleep in today and I'll catch up tomorrow, or I'm tired tonight, whatever. And it doesn't take me too long before I start wobbling on that beam. And it doesn't mean I'm going to go drink, but what it does mean is that I can pull away, and that can be real disastrous for me. We had a speaker one time that talked about the maintenance of your spiritual condition. I always thought that whether I drank or not had to do with that I'd done enough to have the spiritual condition, and it was right there. That was it. I'm on the spiritual condition. But it's a maintenance of it. It's like, what do I do every morning? What do I do during the day? Do I get up in the morning and read and say my prayers? Do I do my steps at night? Do I talk to my sponsor? Have I made commitments? That's the maintenance of it. You know, and it's only through that maintenance that I've been able to have any discipline at all. And for a while, that was fear that drove me, because I was so afraid of becoming a statistic in this program. But then after a while, it's like it has grown into such a wonderful way of life that I'm more apt to do it now because I want to. Not always, but usually. But when they say alcohol is a subtle foe, I remember this person saying one time, we have alcoholism. Not alcoholism. It's a subtle foe. I'm never over alcoholism. I will always have it. I've got this reaction, allergy to alcohol, an obsession and a craving for it. If I took a drink today, I wouldn't start where I ended 17 years ago. My alcoholism progresses even when I'm not drinking. So it was bad when I came here. I was a bad drunk. I was drinking myself to death in my house. And I don't have an idea in my head that I could go out and drink again safely. I know I could go out and drink again. I got another drunk in me somewhere, I know, but I don't know if I ever got another getting sober in me. So why would I throw away such a precious gift? And that's the maintenance of it, is that it keeps me from getting so angry, so lonely, so tired, so, you know, the halt thing. I can never get it right, but I always, you know, got the idea that I'm going to be so ticked someday to go pick up a drink. So that's part of why I want to do this is because I'm not the person I was when I came here. I was a very angry, keyed up person. I was just running through my life. They talk about in here about a tornado back in step 9, where a tornado whirling through the lives of those around us. I was a cyclone, you know, just whoa. And never realized that. I was so tired. First 6 months I was in AA, I slept. If I wasn't at work or going to a meeting, I was sleeping. I was exhausted. All that whirling just tired me out. And so, you know, for a change, I've got some peace of mind, and I'm more relaxed than I've ever been. And people will still say, well, you're pretty keyed up. It's like, well, this is nothing. Whirling dervishes and I have a lot in common. But when it says it's a proper use of our will, when I'll turn my will to prayer, I'll turn my will to just picking up this book and reading it. I've spent a lot of time in ladies' rooms at work reading this book, going, God, please help me not to kill him. Verbally even counts. And calling my sponsor, tied up in a knot. You know, what am I, Anyways, but those are the tools. When I will do that, that's a proper use of my will. To stay in my head long enough that I get so distraught, and I've done that too, unfortunately, to get so distraught that I'm looking for a pit to crawl into, a very deep pit. And thank heaven AA and my sponsor have always pulled me out of that pit, but I'm a depressive. I love to slide into that messy bog. And so what I've learned to do, whether I feel like it or not, whether I think it's a good idea or not, pick up the book and read it, talk to my sponsor, take the inventory. And as a result of that, you know, it's just the walk gets more pleasant year after year after year. That's all I have. Thanks.
Yeah. So I was, like, as I said, pretty gung-ho when I first got to AA, mostly because I, like, wanted to die. And when I started to do this stuff, I didn't want to die. And so I was super excited. And one of the things that baffled me was how anybody could possibly let up on the spiritual program of action. I used to like to go to meetings, and sometimes I would hear people who had been sober longer than me about how they were struggling and not doing stuff, blah, 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 and I was like judging them, like, hello, it's in the book, it's so easy, why don't you just do it? And then I stayed sober for a while, and I realized how incredibly easy it is. It's very easy not for me to not pray. It's very easy for me not to talk about stuff. It's very easy for me to not show up. All I have to do is, like, flick on Netflix and sit on my couch. It's wonderful. Hit the snooze button a few more times. And I can only honestly describe myself as a chronic letter upper, you know? And I don't advocate that at all. Because when I'm not doing this, I am not a particularly happy person. I get a lot of anger. I get so much fear that I will literally, like, shake. I remember going into this meeting one time, and I'm, like, shaking. And I had, like, a year sober. I was, like, shaking. They're like, are you a newcomer? Are you detoxing? I'm like, no, I'm just scared. But that's what happens to me. And I run to the depressive side, too, because next thing I know, you know, I get angry. I get frustrated. I don't know how to get my way out of it. And next thing I'm thinking about is suicide. You know, maybe I should put my car into a wall. Driving home from AA meetings, my feel-good place, thinking about putting my car into a wall, you know? That really taught me that AA meetings don't fix it. It's all the other stuff that I do. I remember when I first came to AA, they were talking about, like, willing to go to any lengths, and I thought, like, showing up at meetings was it. It's not. It's just the tip of the iceberg. And I'll tell you, for the longest time, this is kind of messed up, but that's how I am. I kind of understood that if I let up, I was going to be in pain, that I might drink again, but whatever. I was like, I'm only hurting myself. And I'll tell you, it wasn't too long ago that I realized by letting up and not doing this stuff, it's not just myself that I hurt. I hurt other people. Because when I'm in that state of fear or anger or depression or whatever, I'm not always pleasant to be around. The people at work might get my sharp little tongue. I've been called mean before. You know, I start to neglect my relationships. You know, I got my friends, my mom calling me up, you know, hey, haven't seen you in a while, miss you. And I'm just like, whatever, I got to sit here on my couch, you know. And I start to, like, use people that I care about, you know, to try to make me feel better. Because when I don't do this, I feel like crap. And I will do anything that I have to do to make myself feel people. And I have damaged relationships and things like that. And I'll tell you, the realization that it's not just myself that I'm hurting when I don't do this stuff, that I actually hurt other people, has done a lot to keep me on check. I don't know, since that realization, I do this more often than I don't do it, unlike the other way around that I did all those years. And I don't recommend not doing it, like I said, but I'll tell you, during that time, I think the only thing that saved me was that no matter what was going on, whether I was letting up with the prayer and meditation or not, whether I was keeping secrets, all that stuff, is that I had a sincere desire to live this way. And I always showed up, and I always made time to try to help another person out. And that, honestly, got me through a lot of stuff. And this business of God's will can be confused me for a long time. Like, what am I supposed to do? What's God's will for me? Does God want me to, like, move to California? Does God want me to go get a different job? You know, like, maybe I need to get into social work. Or does God want me to date that boy? What city does God want me to live in? And it sounds kind of silly, but, like, this stuff was, like, a torture. Like, I had to, like, figure out what God's plan for me was so that I could, like, get on board. And I went a little nutty with that, like... They used to say, like, take the next right action. I always hated that because it, like, made my mind explode. I was like, what's the next right action? I have no idea what God wants me to do right now. And there was a couple of things that have been very helpful to me with that. One thing, the next right action is usually just do what's in front of you. That was simple. Be present in the moment. I was given simple stuff like, look around. Is there dirty clothes in your laundry basket? Maybe you should do that. Are the dishes dirty? Maybe you should do that. That's, like, helpful and useful. but the other thing is just to just live by the spiritual principles. You know, if I just practice the honesty, if I just practice the restitution, if I just practice showing up and making an attempt to be helpful, even though I'm not good at it, you know, if I just show up and do these things, God's will has a way of just coming into my life. It's kind of like the alcohol thing. I'm not fighting it or forcing it or trying to make it happen. It just kind of comes naturally and things fall into place. And then that's one of the things I love, because I'm a little bit of intellectual. I like to think a lot. I've been told in the past that I think too much. It's probably true. But it's so much easier. It takes so much pressure off when I don't have to make stuff happen or figure it out all on my own. And just living that way is a lot easier. That's how I bring God's will into my life and to my activities. It's just by focusing on the principles, you know? So much easier. Thank you. Done.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you both for tonight. That's great. So we have no dues or fees. But we do have expenses, and we do support the greater service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And while these contributions that we make, they cover our rent and expenses, it is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office in New York remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all of us around the world. And we're going to do announcements. Does anybody have any announcements for the good of AA tonight?
My name's Donna. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Donna.
There's a new meeting that's 5 weeks old. The It's an emotional sobriety meeting in Norfolk. They have one in Virginia Beach because Mr. Norfolk started back in jail. It's at the United Church of Christ on the corner of Bayview and Wayland. It's Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. Well attended. Good meeting. Please come.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Okay, well, oops. Oh, okay.
West End is having our 34th anniversary this Wednesday. And usually it's at 8, but the speaker will be at 8. We're going to start at 6:30. It's provided, but you want to bring salad for dessert.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Did I see another hand? Okay. This group, Simple Actions, will be hosting our quarterly supper and a speaker on Monday, July 28th. We have our potluck at 6. Please come. Please bring something if you'd like. And at 7 o'clock, Will B. from Richmond will share his story with us. Simple Actions, if you're a member of this home group, and please raise your hands. Anybody that wants to join this home group, please see one of the folks that has their hands raised. Newcomers, anybody here, very first AA meeting ever? Anybody here who's got early in their sobriety, less than 30 days? We'd just like to get to know you. Yes, sir, in the back. Hey, Wyatt. Welcome. Anybody else?
Mary.
Oh.
Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mary. Okay. We have literature on the table over here. We have big books, the hardcover and the softcover. We have some pamphlets and a newcomer's packet if you would like one of those. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we have two folks from our home group, Evan and Casey right here, who will be up here to answer any questions you might have about sponsorship, how to find a sponsor, what does a sponsor do. They can answer all those questions for you. Okay. Also, home group members, we did have an outreach meeting tonight. And if you were not able to attend and want to participate in that work, please see Catherine, who's right here. She'll be up here too. Okay, in closing, thanks again to the panel for being here and sharing your story. And after we've cleaned up, everybody's welcome to join us at Plaza del Sol, which is at 22nd and what?
Colonial.
Colonial. See, everybody knows. We usually go there. It's a good time and a good opportunity to kind of get to know people on a face-to-face basis there. Okay, we're going to say the Lord's Prayer to end the meeting, if you'd like to join us. Did you have an announcement? Okay. Okay. All right.
Thank you. Evan.
I think so.
Are we gonna do it?
I don't know.
No, it's gotta be Evan.
Disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you drudge that road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right.
We're drudging and trudging.
Okay. Our Father.
Amen.